Hello and welcome to the final episode of the Game Mavens podcast. I am your host, though not for long. My name is Joey Chu. I bought a PS4 on day one at midnight, and they put me on TV for that, which is nice, I guess. And, because it's the last episode before things change, I'm going out with a bang, so I'm including a bunch of interviews that I did over the year that I intended to make into full episodes, but that didn't pan out for various reasons. So, let's get right to it. The very first interview is with two of the really awesome dudes from The Maniac Agenda, and then there's dudes that worked on Secret Ponchos and Don't Starve, two incredibly awesome indie games that are hitting PS4 next year. 2014, and then also there's a chat with Eric Limpel and Nick Accardino, both who work for Sony in various capacities, and then I guess I'll save the best for last, which is like the crazy like interview that I mean, like more like a, just a chat about various things from Evangelion to Metal Gear with Shane Benhausen, you know, ex-EGM, ex-1UP, ex-Ignition Entertainment, and now working at Sony. Anyways, so yeah, that's the episode, and rock and roll. I'm here with Maniac Agenda, who are the genius mixers behind the Metal Gear Rising vocal tracks. Yes, so introduce yourselves.
Hi, I'm SAT.
And this is Ramen.
And we're from the Maniac Agenda. And we're an electronic band based out of Philadelphia. We also produce, and we're gamers, and that's why we're here on the show today.
Yeah, to say the least, we're gamers. I mean, me and my man right here already had a Radical Dreamers conversation briefly.
Yeah. My next tattoo is going to be a Chrono Trigger, the C. It's going to be on my back for all you Chrono Trigger fans out there.
Where? On the back, if I may ask.
Oh, well, you know, up in the shoulder, you know, okay. Area, up on my bicep.
When I heard the back, I assumed the worst. I'm sorry.
Tramp stamps?
No, tramp stamp.
We don't do that. But, You have some questions for us, right?
Oh, yeah. They're coming up in my head. They're swimming up, as it were.
Okay.
As they go along.
Open, so swim on.
So, can you just tell me how you guys started off, and then, like, how you, how games affected you guys.
Okay. How we started off was, well, at least I started doing music when I was probably in high school, and I started doing electronic music. Then I moved into hip-hop, and then I got a break working for Questlove with The Roots, the hip-hop band. He was kind of my mentor and gave me, you know, my first real experience in a big studio. And then while I was off doing that thing, my brother, he was off in college working on more industrial electronic kind of tracks. And then eventually, you know, we came together, and then we started making music together. And we started a band called the Maniac All-Stars, and we did some remixes for Cell Dweller. He does a lot of video game soundtracks and stuff like that. And then we did some stuff with that project, but then we started a new project. We ended that one because there was a lot of members in there, and you know, it was just really hard to get things moving. So me and him started working on tracks together, and then we started this project called the Maniac Agenda, and we found this singer, guitar player named Lenny, and he got involved in there. And then, you know, I'm going to let Dennis talk about, you know.
All right. That's the nice and fun, simple version. There's a lot of ups and downs throughout the whole project. But what's that?
Go on. Well, you can talk about
this. Oh, yeah, right? I'm a little bit of a go. Little known fact, we grew up in the hood. Doesn't really show, but we grew up in the hood.
Yeah, number one worst city in America. While we were living there, it was number one. Camden, New Jersey.
Yeah.
So we have some interesting stories about living there. But the cool thing is, we can keep our music up to 11 at 4 in the morning, 5 in the morning.
No time. No, that's one of the best things about living in the hood. The neighbors don't want the cops there, so they're not going to call
the cops.
You will crank that up. It's 4 o'clock in the morning. Band practice short. Bring the drum over. Guitars up to 11. Oh, yeah. Doesn't matter. You know what? They come over. They have their 40s. Like, yo, what was that last track? Yeah, that was hype, man. Like, thank you very much.
Yeah.
As he stumbles out and falls flat on his face. But
on our pavement.
Yes. True story. That happened. I'm very happy about the progress we've made. Platinum has been fantastic. Everything that they did for us, coming to us with the soundtrack, propelled us very, very far in a very short amount of time. He introduced us to Free Dominguez right over there.
Yeah, and we were the remixers. Jamie was the one who actually composed the music, and then they...
It was Jamie and Logan Mader of Machine Head.
It's on the CD. And then, we did the electronic elements and the remixing and stuff like that on there. And then, as far as video games affecting us, you can see in many ways. I like a lot of I grew up in the 80s, so I was kind of letting you know my age there, but I like a lot of the classic games. So Super Nintendo, Chrono Trigger, even regular Nintendo, like the Ninja Turtles game. This game called Snake Rattle and Roll, which is impossible without Game Genie. It's like 100. It's impossible if you don't have Game Genie. So it's like one of those, right?
Yeah, Game Genie. That also dates you right there.
Yeah,
Game Genie.
I know, right? Remember that? Remember Nintendo Power?
No, they don't. That's my point.
I know. See, so obviously games had a big influence on our musical style early on, because. And that's one of the things.
Influence. All right, I'll say this one. For me personally, Rowan, biggest musical influence I've ever had in my life, Mega Man 3, the intro, and the boss music, Wily's theme, Mega Man 2. Yeah, no, that completely changed everything.
Yeah.
All it was just synth metal. And that was it. I knew that's what I needed to be. That's what needs to happen.
If you hear the Halo 4 remix that we did, it's on our SoundCloud page. You actually a section that we kind of like dedicated to old school Mega Man, but in the modern style.
I completely took one of the synths and just I'm going to make sure this sounds as modern as possible with sounding as retro as possible. It's a complete ode to Mega Man, 100%.
Yeah.
I love the blue bomb.
Yeah, so that was a pleasure to actually, Tanaka-san.
Oh yeah, one of the guys Platinum worked Games. On Metal Gear.
He worked on Mega Man X's series. Yeah.
Mega Man X
so
stuff.
It was really a pleasure.
When I saw that, I was like, this makes 100% sense why this man's coming to us.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, this is right. This is good.
Yeah. So that was really cool. So video games definitely had an influence in our life early on, especially.
Just personally and professionally, obviously professionally, introduced to a hell of a lot of really talented people, good people, connected people, and on the personal level, like, I'm not gonna lie, I'm a geek straight up. I mean, I wrote a piano song called Radical Dreamers, as my man now knows.
So there we go. Any other questions?
Let's get some more Chrono Cross, Chrono Trigger love.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, actually, fun little fact, our old band, before it broke up, we are actually going to have our debut EP. Every track was going to be named after a triple tack from Chrono Trigger.
Yep.
Arc Impulse
was one of the songs.
The Arc Impulse, Lifeline, a couple others.
Dark Eternal. Actually, that song, we actually still may do that in the Maniac Agenda project. We don't know yet.
There's a lot of weird
politics
area
around that.
I don't want to get into that.
Yeah, we'll see about that. But yeah, our actual old band EP was inspired from Chrono Trigger.
Like every song, just we're gonna write the chorus based off that. That's a good direction. Yeah, Lifeline was the beast one. Lifeline and Dark Eternal. Those are the good ones. We used the old school ones because I think they changed the names for the DS re-release.
Was it DS? Yeah.
Because I noticed my friend was playing. Like, I don't remember any of these names in here at all. This is not what I'm basing my music off of. That's a fun little factoid about us.
Yeah.
All right. How far back do you go with Metal Gear Solid?
Oh, Metal Gear Solid.
And Metal Gear Rising. All that together.
See, there's a PlayStation. I remember playing it, the original Metal Gear.
No. I rented it one time on NES.
Blockbuster. What was the place before it was Blockbuster?
No, it wasn't even Blockbuster. It was like West Coast Video.
I was like a baby, but yeah.
You wasn't a baby. I was a young ass kid. I just remember the little guys running around the screen. I'm like,
super pixelated Snake and whatnot.
Yeah. I think it was the first time I actually played the game.
I guess you could say all the way back to the beginning.
Yeah.
Like, it's kind of always been to a certain extent.
Yeah. And then,
I know I played the original one on PlayStation through the Microsoft. That was awesome. I never got to play the other ones, but when I was in college, I remember when I was doing music in the dorm room, on the other side of the dorm room, all my buddies were sitting there playing, I think it was two, and then pretty much all of them. They,
Sons of Liberty.
That was part two.
That was awesome. I love that one.
Riding.
Yep.
Riding back when you had an eye and a jaw.
Yep.
Yep.
Yeah.
But and then obviously the most recent with the
Metal Gear Rising.
Yeah.
Revengeance.
Awesome. Yeah. Revengeance. That's an awkward translational error. That's one thing I've noticed. I know a lot of some American games will just make up Japanese words, and Japanese games will do the same exact thing. We're just gonna combine things, and it will sound awesome to the other culture. Dragon Ball does that a lot. I've noticed that with Dragon Ball.
This is our revenge for Daikatana. We're getting revenge.
That's what I heard. I heard something. There's some story. I didn't quite get it, but revengeance. The word revengeance. I noticed the American version made the text super small. Metal Gear Rising all big. Revengeance like 2-point font. Like so small.
Can you give us some like stories about when you were doing the tracks for Revengeance?
We can give out some of these. We have to be careful because we do beats on NDA.
Yeah, but something involving Free, because she's here.
See, unfortunately, we didn't even get to actually meet any people. We just got the vocals sent to us. I know when we got them in pairs or something like that. We were like, all right, which one are we going to do next? She sent us to. We heard the one, guitarists were completely insane. It was Els Monsoon. And then we got
States
the one.
Of time.
And then we got the one with Free. We listened to acapella. We heard the pitch bend on the Stranger I Remember, and we were like, "Oh,
yo, that's the one! That's the one!" I hit up Platinum the next day after hearing that. I was like, "Who is that? Who is singing that?" And then they told us.
I was like, "Oh, I remember. I like the Kidney Thieves quite a bit, actually."
And then we were like, "You know what? We're gonna."
My girlfriend loves the Kidney Thieves.
So when we were at the launch party before then, I actually emailed Free and was like, "Hey, you know, I really love what you did on the soundtrack. Are you gonna be at the Metal Gear launch party?" And then we linked up with her, and then we hit it off really well. And now
she killed it at the show.
Yeah, she did a really good job.
She killed it at the show.
You can YouTube that. She did a really good job.
Yeah, she did good.
And on the track too.
She's modest about it, but
she killed it on her performances here. Actually, that's where we're at right now in New York City. So we're from the East Coast. She's from the West Coast. So when she came back over here, we wanted to come out, show our support, and just hang out with her and everything like that. So we're actually working on a collaboration with her right now. That's tentatively called Radical Dreamers.
Nice. Well, we sent her a couple of ones, but that's one of the ones she did seem to say she was a little partial towards.
Yeah.
I'm happy because I was very particularly proud of that piano part.
Yeah.
That was me.
Yeah.
Thank you. Sorry. So I gloated my bad.
Yeah. So we don't know what's going on with that as far as like direction or name titles or anything. It's kind of like in the air, but
it's all up in the air.
Because, as an artist, you just want to vibe out on a track and just take it where it goes and just go with the emotions and wherever the music and creativity takes you. So that's kind of where that's at.
I know me personally, I've been looking to work with a female singer of that stature quite a bit. So female singer that can bring the attitude and the energy.
Yeah.
Because a lot of them, they can sing very soft and pretty, and that's good, but you're not selling it as well as a lot of the male singers out there. Like, they go completely out, completely balls to the wall. Free hangs with them amazingly well.
Yeah.
Very, very talented.
I like it because she has that bluesy, soulful, and that power rock grit. She has both. She can do the calm, the very intimate, soft, indie rock, trip hop kind of vocal, but then she can really belt out those, power anthems. Yeah. very reminiscent of like Hailstorm, Lizzie Hale.
And yeah, she gets in that territory. Like, so,
yeah. Lizzie Hale's from our area, so that's why I could be.
We like Hailstorm a lot, too. Yeah, we have a thing for gritty female singers.
Yeah, so. I like that. So, there we go.
But yeah, that's a...
There's a little story.
Do you have any questions for us, or...?
Thoughts about the game itself, Metal Gear Rising?
Oh, all right.
We'll go all across the gamut. Like, the play, the story, Ryzen himself, all that stuff. All
right. Well, I love free cut mode, because when I'm angry and I'm having a bad day...
No, we're yelling at each other in the studio because he wants double bass pedal. I want halftime, you know. There's a little bit of heat there, I'm not going to lie.
Yeah. Sometimes me and him get into arguments or even with the other members. We'll be like, it's a great way to go into the game and just like cut stuff up.
This car is now your face. Yeah. I hope this sends you a message.
Exactly. So it's definitely good for that. I like the, obviously, the storyline.
So over the top.
Sundowner. He's like
super like importing children.
Yeah. I love how they brought the humor into it when they were doing the Ninja Turtle, because I love Ninja Turtles.
No. Like we already dated ourselves here. We grew up on Ninja Turtles. We had like all the toys back then. All the toys.
My first concert ever was the Ninja Turtles.
Mine too.
Concert.
Oh my god.
Yes.
Yep.
So
I was too young, I couldn't go.
Yeah.
I did.
When I saw that in the actual gameplay, I lost it. I was like, oh my gosh.
Yeah,
this
that was
is
pretty in the sewer nonetheless.
Yes.
In the sewer nonetheless.
Yes. Yes. So that really, really set it over the top for me.
The whole game is complete. That's like Metal Gear as a whole. But yeah. With bringing like more of an action element, just completely, now everything has to be insane.
Yeah.
Everything. I'm going to jump on missiles a whole bunch.
The boss battles, I love them. I love how they integrated the music into the intensity of the boss battle. And I like that a lot, because obviously that's the part that we helped work on. So, and that got like the raging reviews. So I felt so good about that. And it was very rewarding to see that come about. And then, we haven't gone through the whole game yet. Like, I'm still playing through it, because, like I said, we're working on our album Through Fire and Flood right now.
Well, see, the thing is, because we worked on the game together, we don't really want to play it by ourselves, because we want to get to the parts where, you know, it's our song. We did this. And
so we want everyone...
we all got to be there for.
Yeah, we want the whole band there, so it's like, we kind of do it in sections, so it's like, okay, I think I'm getting where Monsoon is. I'm going to wait until tomorrow to play it. And then maybe you don't get a chance to play it tomorrow, or, you know, we're out somewhere. So, you know, we're still going through the game right now. I think we're...
So you haven't gotten to Monsoon yet?
No, we're actually about to.
Right at Monsoon.
Right at Monsoon.
I heard he's so hard.
We saw the footage. They sent us something to base it off of, so we knew, but...
Right before the boss fight?
No,
we just... I'm not gonna say shit.
Don't.
Okay, good. I don't want to know anything.
Yeah.
This shit's gonna get real.
I believe it. Well, I heard the song, like, super fast drum.
Yeah, just for reference, it's 200 beats per minute, but since it's double pedaling, it's actually...
It goes up to... Parts of it goes up, like, 400 beats per minute. It's insanely fast.
We come from electronic realm.
That doesn't happen.
Tell other, like, another DJ or someone who's in an electronic musician that, they're like, what does that sound like? They don't even know. That's like out of their element. So then I'll send it to them, and then they'll be like, oh, wow.
I'm not gonna lie, that song kind of kicked our asses.
That was probably the hardest.
We were behind deadline and all that, and we were completely living off of coffee. I mean, even when we met the guys out in LA, all the developers, like, yeah, we know what we put you through are bad, but yeah. Came out awesome, but thanks, guys. Thanks.
It all paid off.
It was awesome. It was beautiful.
I mean, the song came out awesome.
Everything. You could just hear all the hard work and dedication of all the great people working together in a collaborative manner, and, you know, you could just listen to the songs themselves, and the critics have been speaking for it, and, you know, the songs speak for themselves.
Yeah, I like that. You play the songs, and it doesn't sound like a song for a video game. It sounds like some really awesome cutting-edge metal, which I am 100% about. 100%.
Yeah.
So. Yep.
In some ways, Seeds of Time isn't just Monsoon's song.
I don't know that yet.
I'll leave it that way. I'm sorry I said that much.
It's cool. I'm just gonna let it. I'll ignore it.
Just let it fade away.
Just gone. I heard nothing.
Flash away the song. Seeds of Time.
There's no memory, it's only time. In the morning, sinking. I know it.
Alright, any other questions?
Yeah, anything else?
Have you got any final words in general? Yeah.
Shameless promo. We got that, obviously.
Yeah. We're actually working on our album right now called Through Fire and Blood. Well, it's actually more of an EP, but it's pretty long.
It's good.
Yeah, and not pretty good, but it's
awesome.
Fucking awesome.
When I was saying, promise you, it stacks up.
When I was saying pretty good, I was referring to my other statement, not the actual content. The content, if you like the Metal Gear soundtrack, you are going to love our stuff, because it is very similar in the same lane, and there's a lot of surprises, twists and turns, and
as I like to say to everyone when they ask about our stuff compared to Metal Gear, like, there's a reason Platinum Games came to us. It sounds like us.
Yeah.
I mean, granted, we have the awesome singers and other awesome guitar players on there, but it's very, very close.
Yeah, so we're actually going to be, we're going to be releasing it for free, but we're also going to be having pre-orders at a deluxe edition that you can buy that comes with a lot of special stuff like behind the scenes, commentary, demo tracks, and then for producers out there, we'll have production packs and stuff out there, and you can get all this information on our social networks, which is any of the social networks /TheManiacAgenda, and then also our website at www.maniacmusic.net. So we're really, really excited for this album to come out. It's badass, and it is awesome. It's gonna be another soundtrack for your video game. When you wanna go and wanna frag some noobs, you pop in our disc first. It's perfect. I don't wanna spoil everything.
No. Just don't.
I'm not gonna spoil. All right. I can't even spoil it. But
anything.
We basically have it set up so it's the perfect album for fragging your noobs. Yes. So.
But anything else? We got
shout out to Len Rizzo, who's not with us right now, but he's working on some music. He's doing some gigs right now. So
shout out to Logan Mater, Machine Head. Shout out to JP and Tanaka-san of Platinum Games. Everyone else at Platinum Games for having us on.
Free Dominguez, who brought us here today.
Yes, definitely shout out to her. And Tyson, you know who you are as a singer on.
There will be blood.
That guy.
Yeah.
So, Tyson Lee.
Tyson Yang. And that's Jason Charles Miller.
Yeah, Jason Charles Miller.
Himself.
Awesome.
That's everyone I can think of off the top of my head. If I forgot anyone, we apologize profusely. You can yell at us, go on our Facebook.
Yeah.
Maniac Agenda.
Yeah.
Yell at us there.
Okay. Alright, that's it.
Anything else?
I just thought of a really evil last question.
Alright.
Okay.
What would be your favorite song from the Rising soundtrack?
That you guys
did. You can pick one, baby.
I know I have a favorite, and then I have a favorite part.
Yeah, we can go with that.
Okay. My favorite part is the last drop at the end of Sundowner.
The solo,
when it's that is probably my favorite part. Song as a whole, oh man.
It's probably,
Man, it's tough. It's a toss up.
I'm leaning towards what we did with Free. Yeah.
Tyson Yen, man. I don't know.
You are a prick, sir. You are a prick.
I don't know. I guess we're gonna have to agree to disagree on that one. But yeah. So that's pretty much where I guess.
Yeah,
we're
we're gonna go with that.
So. All right. Thank you very much, both of you.
All right. Thank you for having us on the show, Joey.
Yes. Thank you for.
with, how do I read your name? Yusef Mafara.
Yeah?
Yusef Mafara, who works on Secret Punches. Is that your game? Secret Punches. I'm afraid I'm not loud enough. Is that your game? Or you're working with the team, right?
Yeah, yeah. That's our game.
Bulls. And I'm trying to remember what it looks like because it's not here for us to play. Like in this event, so it's an isometric, and it's a Western theme, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's a stylized spaghetti Western, and you know, we got kind of a graphic look, you know, and
like a graphic novel, like comics. Sort of?
Yeah, very. Comic.
That's the sense I got.
Like our character designer actually did our art director did character designs for the Batman animated series for Transformers Prime. So he's got a really crazy art style, and so we just let him. We just thought, what if we let him go to town with this spaghetti Western theme, and then that's where we ended up with. So it's kind of like there's a lot of realistic kind of Westerns, but this is like a comic book Western.
I think I saw that there was like in terms of the game mechanic, I think I saw like there was cover at some point.
Yeah, you can take cover. It's like a team shooter, but imagine the camera's up top, right? But now that it's up top, you can see everyone running around the environment, and you can see exactly how far they are, you know, who's where. So it actually lets us draw inspiration from like a fighting game, you know. So because now you can like see like, you know, my attack range with my pistol is like 8 meters, and that guy's got a rifle and he's got 12 meters. So how do I get in, take my shot, and get out of his range again?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It starts to play like a fighting game because that's under the hood. That's how a fighting game works. Like Ryu's kick, you know, might have a certain distance, and Dalsim's kick might have a certain. And Ryu's like, how do I get in? You know, and Dalsim's like, how do I keep him away? So that's. Basically, yeah, we have a bunch of different attacks, so you're always trying to, every move that they do, you might try and counter it with something else, and so it's just a weird cross between a shooter and a fighting game, I guess.
You see, fighting game, like, so action, like, the action isn't just shooting then, can you get it up close and...
Oh yeah, there's like, I mean, here's an example, I'll say with Kid Red, you can like, dive roll, you can do like, single shots that are like, a certain speed, you can fire both your guns at the same time for a heavy attack, and the heavy attack has less range, but it stuns the dude. Once you stun the dude, you might be able to like roll in and attach a dynamite to him, so you can do combos and take cover, all that kind of stuff. So it's not just like shooting and running around. It's like, you know, everyone's got like a series of attacks and different weapons and stuff.
You're saying everyone and Big Red, so I presume there's like many more playable characters?
Not many. I mean, we're small, so we're going to launch with 6 because we could have added a lot, but we wanted to really, I mean, it's just better to balance it. And then we're going to keep adding after with DLC. So I think launching with 6 characters for a digital game is, as long as they're...
6 is pretty sizable, I think. That's my opinion. But
it's, if we bit off more, then I think that, I mean, it would have been nice, but then we'd rather not take any risk with the quality, you know?
Yeah. Can you talk to like the whole experience of like from the pre-production, the prep stuff, leading up to when you were on stage at E3, like your guys' like game as well as all the other indie ones, and that crazy awesome like
I was nuts.
Nine. That's crazy. Yeah, can you like talk about that?
Yeah, I mean we were just a bunch of friends making our game, and we all worked at different studios, but we needed to make our own game just for fun because you know you just have all this creative energy, and sometimes it's nice to make something in a non-corporate environment. So we went to PAX to show the game, and Sony, we didn't know they were Sony, but they came up, they said they liked it, and how do we get this on PS4? So we were super excited, and then fast forward like 2 months later, we're on stage at their press conference, and we just were like, how did we end up here, you know? It was like, and even being here in New York, it's just Sony's really embraced indie developers, and it's good.
Yeah. Is there anything like are there any interesting like features from PS4 that? I mean, you were developing this on like computer, like personal computers, right?
Yeah.
Beforehand, so anything interesting on the PS4 interface?
Well, the hardware is nice. Like it's powerful, right? I got a lot of processors, and then we really like the share button. Like to us, as a competitive multiplayer game, it just makes it easy for people to like. You know, like you have some awesome fight against some guy who's way better than you and you beat him, and then you're, you know, like you can access that stuff. And I think in competitive games, gamers do that anyways, but they have to go through so much trouble to record and upload it and stuff. So we're just glad that they did that, and we're hoping we can leverage some spectator mode, because that'd be sweet to see like two epic guys battling each other and treat it more like esports.
Oh, yeah, I can't wait for that.
can't wait to see that.
Yeah,
or participate in that even. We'll see. And last question. Out of every game that's been announced and like coming out for PS4, what are you looking forward to the most? You can say your game if you want.
No, that'd be the worst thing to say. Like,
okay,
I
you scratch that then. You can't say your game.
Yeah.
Never.
I like Contrast a lot. You know, it has a very elegant art style.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's just a beautiful game, and it, you know, Don't Starve. I love the digital space. That's my, and every game in there seems to push style and just kind of come up with some surprising concept. And so, Octodad is amazing. So I'm, you know, anything in the digital space I tend to love a lot. And but those, yeah, Contrast would be my the one I was the most excited to actually come here and play today.
And it's gonna be out for launch like this week, like because it's free with the PS4 and PS Plus.
And Secret Poncho is gonna be on
the that place. Too? I was really happy when I heard that too. So yeah, thank you very much for your time.
Oh, if anyone wants to follow us, we're pretty active on our Facebook page. So
awesome.
That's the best way just to the devs. We just run the page ourselves. Like, it's not like some PR company. So
awesome.
If you get a message, it's from one of us. So feel free to join.
All right. So I should have asked this before. What was the development team called? And like
Switchblade Monkeys.
Switchblade Monkeys.
Yeah, but our Facebook is just Secret Ponchos.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you very much for your time.
Hey, no problem, man.
Yes. I finally found what your full name again?
Matthew Martinson.
Matthew Martinson, that's how you pronounce it. Matthew Martinson. That is an awesome spelling, I will say. And you are the entire audio department for Don't Starve.
Yeah.
Let's talk nebulous sound design talk. can you tell me about the general philosophy of Don't Starve's audio profile?
It's generally the same idea, philosophy I have for all of the games that I do sound for. When you're doing sounds for games, you either have to be world-building or informing the player of something. You're either building a world that immerses a player within this world, or you're telling something that they need to know. You know, like HUD sounds of your health is low, your gun ran out of ammunition, whatever it may be. That's an informative thing you need to teach the player. The rest is making this a really cool, living, breathing world that you can get lost in.
And then die, thanks to Charlie.
So, Charlie. Charlie is a great example of, you know, it builds a world, but the main thing is you're about to die. And you're about to die because it's dark. So there's a warning sign of Charlie growls before biting. So you've got a chance. You're informed of, okay, Charlie's there. It's about to get me. I need to get somewhere where there's light.
So he's absolutely inescapable. You can't, hit something to...
Make light. That is the only way to escape
Let
Charlie.
Let there be light, motherfucker. And he's boom, he's out. Yeah, fireplace. Cool.
So, yeah.
How about how many styles of music did you go through to figure out the right one for Don't Starve?
We nailed it down pretty quick, actually. We've got two amazing composers who work as a team, Vince and Jason. They've done all the music for all our games at Clay, which, when you look at all the music they produce, is amazing. That they did, you know, Shank's music and Mark of the Ninja's music and Don't Starve's music, you know, all very different. But we really, we really trust them, and we gave them some direction, you know. We told them a couple of things. You know, Tom Waits' circusy music was one of the directions we gave them, and they ran with it, and they were like, how about this? And we're like, yeah, that's awesome. We've kept adding more music as the game has gone on, too. So now the PS4 version has all of that already in it. So
all brand new music, not like rearranged versions or.
No, so you got there's a certain segment of music that plays during the summer, and now there's a different set of music that plays in the winter, and there's a different set of music that plays when you're in the caves. So it all informs the same things, but it gives different gives you like different feel of like I'm in winter now. This is the winter music.
I mean, there's not much, like, all the dialogue is, all the things that are spoken are, like, in text boxes, and
yes.
There's no voice, necessarily, right?
But they're not reading it out, right? No, the voice is, there's a different musical instrument for each character. I was inspired by Charlie Brown's teacher in the cartoons. And the classical piece, Peter and the Wolf. Which tells the story of Peter and the Wolf, where every character has a different instrument in the orchestra telling the story. So all the different characters that you can play at in the game have a different instrument for their voice that fits their particular character.
Do you have any particular feelings one way or the other about like actually like bringing someone into a booth and recording like voice effects or like recording dialogue?
Oh, it's great. I mean, we did a massive amount of dialogue in Mark of the Ninja, per se. I was one of the voice actors on that game. So it's for our game, for Don't Starve, doing actual voice dialogue didn't make sense for the tone of the game and how we were producing the dialogue. You know, you have to really have your story set out and write all your dialogue to give to a voice actor to record. Our game, because we were designing so quickly and making up so many new things and writing so many lines of dialogue, that there was just no way we could have a voice record. You know, if you add up all the text strings, there's thousands of lines of, you know, each character describing every single thing that they can look at in the game. So it was a bit unwieldy to take on a real voice to do that. But we wanted them to talk in a way. So we found, well, we can give them a voice through instruments that'll, like, give them a personality. Because the voice, be it an instrument or a real voice, gives a lot of the personality to the character.
I guess the last question, what are you looking forward to on the PS4, like software library, like, in general, like, coming up?
Today's the first day I'm actually finally getting to check stuff out. There are so many great indie games coming to the PS4, which are awesome. You know, Us, Octodad, 1001 Spikes, Resogun looks amazing. You know, I'm really excited that all us indie people are being held to the same standard that, like, the AAA guys are and put on the same level. So it's not like, oh, those guys are over there and, you know, these are the big titles. It's just like, no, these are all games and they're all great games.
Thank you very much for your time,
Andy. Thanks. Great talking to you.
Yeah. Walking people up in front of me, so I'm walking backward, not walking forward, and here's Eric Lundfeld. So I don't know off the top of my head, like, what's your position at Sony?
So my official position is Vice President, Sony Network Entertainment. I oversee the network business in the Americas and global marketing for network services.
Could you explain that?
Sure. So basically, I work closely with the teams who run PlayStation Network, who manage the store, manage a lot of the user experience, and manage the backbone of the network.
So, this sounds like I'm trying to like run like customer service questions to you. Sorry about that. But like in the download list area, like everything's glommed together, like between the platforms, there's PSP, PS1 download games, PS3, and like not just the games, like all the DLC and stuff and the licenses to unlock the demos. Like that's all in there. Like isn't there like, is it going to be like a mass? Because this is like 7+ years of digital content. It would be a massive undertaking to have to like find some way to sort all that out, huh?
Sure. Well, actually, on the PS4, you'll only see your PS4 content, so it makes it a little easier there.
So it's more platform agnostic.
Exactly. But on the PS3, you can also navigate to the content that you already own in the store. You search it using the search engine and download it right from there as well. So if you are looking for something that you bought in the past and want to download it, that's another alternative if you have a lot of content. But as you know, we've made enhancements to the network over the past 7 years. We're constantly looking to make improvements. So that's an area that we feel a lot of people want us to take a look at. We definitely will.
I think there's an element of it because like the PS4 is out, and now like you rolled out the PlayStation app. Was it out like previously in like another form?
No, this is the first time we've got the PlayStation Companion app. There have been other apps related to games, and in some cases, access to our website or items that read trophies that weren't made by PlayStation, but this is the official PlayStation app, the first time it's out.
Was it a deliberate decision to roll it out with the PS4?
Yes, because it plays a big part in the PS4. I mean, as you know, the PS4 is all about community. You've completely changed the user interface. You can find out what your friends are doing at any time, catch up with them, look at their big epic moments. So the Companion app even takes that further. So when you're on the go, you can still keep in touch with your community on the PlayStation 4. You can link out to the PlayStation Store and buy content. And I think you know this, but just in case you don't, if you do see content from the Companion app and you link out to the store, if you buy that content, we'll automatically wake up your PS4 out of standby mode, download that content, making it really easy when you get home to play with them.
Yay. Yeah, I remember if you have your Sony tablet or like any other tablet hardware or your phone, so we'll get to the Companion app that you you peruse someone's live stream like broadcast.
So from the Companion app, sorry.
Oh, like would it be the Companion app or because there's like the various like you stream and Twitch, so you can just like. I mean that's just the PS4 like broadcasting through the service,
right?
And then
right.
You like no matter what, you could just hit that on a platform and then like catch the
so,
play
so,
PS4.
So you could also see the broadcast from Twitch and Ustream on a tablet on a PC outside of the PS4. When you're on the PS4, you'll only see streams that are coming from PS4.
When did you join Sony specifically and the game element of Sony?
So I've actually been with the game element of Sony for over 13 years.
Wow.
I was brought on before there was a network. I was actually brought on to work with teams to start thinking about how we build a network, how we deliver content to consumers in their home. And this was before the PS2 launched. So, exactly. So
with that thing definitely didn't launch with the network.
Well, it ultimately went online. You know, we had the network adapter. But then with the PS3, we turned on PSN for the first time. The store was there day one. And we've evolved it so much since then. I mean, you've seen that over the years, we've delivered on so many new features. We delivered trophies. We delivered the in-game XMB, which so many people asked for a couple years in. We've delivered a movie service, a music service, partner applications. So everything we have on the PS4 day one is a lot of what we wanted to deliver for a long time. We're really taking advantage of the power of the hardware, but there's a lot more to come. So it really is only the beginning once again. But for day one, it's a really great offering and a lot to explore.
One more question.
We're out there.
All right, I know it's got Rudy's favorite color. What's your favorite color?
Blue.
Awesome. Oh, yeah, sure. It's very tall.
Blue, PlayStation Blue.
Yes. Thank you very much.
Thank you very
time.
Much. It's nice
Absolutely.
Meeting you. Thanks.
So it's like the day, literally the day before the PS4 launches at midnight.
I'm first in line, yay!
I don't know. Anyway, and I'm here with Nick. How do you pronounce your last name?
Accordino.
Accordino. Nick Accordino. I don't know if you noticed before, I was stumbling like trying to read it as Accordiano or something. That was really weird. I don't know. And what do you do at Sony?
I'm a producer for our international software department. So I'm the producer on NAC, basically.
Oh. Like not just NAC though, right?
Yeah, several different titles, but I'm here representing NAC, because it's a PS4 show, so...
Oh, yeah. Well, how did you start off at Sony, if I may ask? Like, your origins at Sony or something like that?
When? So, I've been at Sony for about 2.5 years. Before then, I was at Konami for a few months. But basically, I've been a producer the entire time. I've just been, you know, in ISD, in my department, we take the games that are produced or are developed overseas, and we basically do everything that needs to be done to get them ready for a CEA.
What kind of stuff would that entail?
So like localization, making sure everything's compliant with legal, coordinating marketing and PR-related activities, pulling everything together, and then making sure it gets through our appropriate quality assurance process. It's like everything that I have to deal with. You know, along with like evangelizing it at shows like
A3.
Okay.
No, we're good. Thank you. Suddenly sausage.
Yeah.
You mentioned localization, and is it in the development side, like the developer side, like as somebody who like plays a bunch of Japanese games brought over here, and like there is like the whole bit where there's like some games have like a voice selection,
right,
or whatnot, like is that all like not apart from the process that you guys are involved in? Or?
Well, I mean, over
the
here, you know, the localization actually happens in a few different spots, but it's more my job to make sure that it's accurate, you know, and it sounds good over here in American English, so if there's anything awkward, I go in and help fix that. But, yeah, I mean, the decisions about what's voice and what's just text and all that good stuff is always made, like, far early in the process, because, you know, for the European territories, you have to put it into, like, you know, 15 different languages if it's a big title. So, yeah, that's always on the development side, but my job is to basically coordinate the four languages for our territory, which is American English, Canadian French, Latin American Espanol, and Brazilian Portuguese. So that's what I mean when I say localization. It's more like culturalization, I guess, because we have to make sure that, you know, content in the game, too, is not, you know, well, that it is appropriate for American audiences, so that's all part of it.
And that was like the first PS4 game announced.
That's right.
Yeah,
yep.
That was pretty fun. That was great to watch on the PlayStation Media thing earlier this year.
Yep. Yeah. The reveal event.
Yay, Knack. So I don't know. Just give me some quick thoughts on Knack, I guess.
On Knack?
And the work that you helped did on, because you mentioned like you're a producer.
Yeah.
So I was like, general like producer as producer, like that's so you.
So,
whole lot of the stuff.
Yeah, so the first thing I did on NAC was I was helping to coordinate the motion capture, because the game has about 90 minutes of CGI level, like Pixar cutscenes inside of it, and they're all motion captured. The team that did the motion capture are the same guys who did the motion capture for Uncharted 2 and Uncharted 3, and they're based in San Diego. The game is actually developed in Japan, so my first task was to help our Japanese producers come over here and work with the team in San Diego and help get some motion capture done. So we did that, and then, you know, I was involved with the weekly meetings just on the animation back and forth, because there's some animation taking place in Japan, some over here in the States. And, you know, it all has to come together with all of our localized languages and the gameplay into one cohesive package. So that's how it started, and then it kind of went down more of a typical path where we would start to get builds and we would test them out. And, you know, we'd try to, line up all the demos for our shows and various events. And, you know, it takes, you know, you get used to it after you do it a few times, but it's a very normal course of events that happens when you produce a game. So getting the messaging right and making sure that everybody was having fun with NAC was, you know, the top priority. And I think it turned out pretty well. You know, I think there's a lot of fun to be had there. And, you know, it's our family game. Marcus described it as a secondary purchase, I think, once or twice.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, dad goes out and picks up a PS4 for himself, gets Killzone or Assassin's Creed or what have you, but when he wants to bring something home to the family, like, that's a great choice. It's got fantastic, like, drop-in, drop-out co-op, so... you know, if you haven't tried it out, I would suggest, like, really giving it a shot. I mean, you played it here. You know,
yeah, I did.
Like, your impressions you can give, I'm sure, later. But just overall, I think it turned out pretty well, and I'm pretty proud of it.
Are there any interesting stories that you could possibly share during the development?
Oh, gosh. Not off the top of my head.
Maybe,
you know,
like, during
one,
the vocab
session? I'll give you one cool tidbit, is that the doctor, who's one of the characters in the game,
yep,
his name is Dr. Vargas. He's actually named after one of the guys that was leading all the motion capture and stuff. So, yeah, he basically, like, helped coordinate all the motion capture. So to thank him, we put his name in the game and named a character after him.
Was it, you mentioned, like, a brief stint at Konami. Like, could you speak to whatever, anything that you, the work that you did there?
Yeah, I was part of the social media team. So I was posting on Twitter and Facebook and trying to help spread the word about, you know, Metal Gear and Frogger and all Konami's
DDR.
Like
DDR 99 Nights 2, was that around that time?
99 Nights 2 was like 2006. Like, that was
no, Part 2.
Part 2?
Yeah, when Takuji did his crazy 1 million troops and stuff.
I don't know.
It was like 2010, I think. Yeah.
I don't know. Got me. So, yeah, that was a good time. It was great to be there, but you know, Sony came knocking, and you know, I've been a PlayStation fan my entire life, so it was time to join the team.
Anything coming out next year that you're looking forward to?
Next year?
Yes.
Well, you know, the host of all of our indie games, I think, are going to be fantastic. In particular, Octodad, 1001 Spikes, Transistor, and The Witness all look amazing, so I can't wait to play all of them. I'm hugely addicted to Diablo 3 on the PS3, so I'm excited to upgrade to the PS4 version. You know, there's stuff that I'm looking forward to that I can't talk about yet.
Of course.
So that's coming as well. But, you know, I'm just in general, like, I think this year has been kind of amazing in terms of the game content that's come out. I think 2013 has been, like, the strongest year for games in the past, like, decade. So, you know, I really don't know. There's a lot of stuff that remains unseen, but, you know, the lineup on the PS4 is the best lineup I have seen, and I love it. So I'm looking forward to downloading everything and playing online and finally getting in, like, party chat with everybody and just having a good time.
All right, thanks very much for your time.
Yeah, absolutely. You're welcome.
I am here with the man, the myth, the man god, Shane Van Houser. I had to say that. I'm
that
sorry.
Nickname is kind of old, dude, but yeah, I guess I still remember it.
Well, do you prefer Cooter?
Wow, I haven't heard that one in a really long time either. I guess I prefer man god to Cooter.
I always thought, like, maybe, like, got tired, like, putting them together, Cooter man god. But that sounds a bit awkward.
Yeah, I guess I'll take man god.
Yeah.
Just call me that.
Yeah, so Shane Van Houser, we'll just continue with your real name. Anyway, yeah, so Shane, like, years since, like, one of, like, died once.
It weirdly still kind of persists, and if you would have told me that, like, you know, Ziff Davis and 1UP would end up in different places and get bought all these times, and yeah, it's a little weird, and I'm sad that not all the content is still up there for people to see. Hopefully people have been archiving it, and I hear that maybe the 1UP show and Broken Pixels and everything will still be available forever on HD in the future, so...
In HD?
That's a rumor going around, that like they actually got the rights back to the source tapes and they're being like remastered. I hope it's true, because I would love to go back and watch that stuff again.
That would be, yes, I want to see Agent Kong take down whoever the hell that was.
I like you go straight to Queen of Queens. Yeah, Queen of Queens for the PCFX. Maybe the greatest all-female full-motion video wrestling game ever made.
Yes. I also want to, like one day, just, like, I'm, as like a terrible person, be like, to my friend, I'll pay you $500 to cosplay as Agent Kong. Because I remember Sean Baby was like, he wanted to see that happen.
I think she's still alive in Japan, allegedly. That's what I've heard. I like how we're at the PlayStation 4 launch talking about Asia Kong.
Yes, yes. So yeah, since 1UP, like you moved to Ignition Entertainment, where you...
I was there for 2 years, yeah. I worked on titles like Muramasa, Deadly Premonition, El Shaddai. It was an exciting time, and then...
you guys tried to get Dragon's Crown done, right?
Well, actually, I'm so happy to see Dragon's Crown finally come out and be successful, because when I was working there, you know, Dragon's Crown was one of the big titles we were working on, and it was constantly in danger of being canceled because it took a long time, and Vanillaware works very slowly in their own way. But I always knew that it was going to be an amazing game, so I kept it going the whole time I was there. And then right before I left, I helped kind of make sure that it ended up in good hands with Atlas. And I think they actually made it a better game than it even was when we had it, and they did a great job marketing, and I'm really happy to see the success. So, yeah.
Are you able to talk in any way about... Remember the original announcement was something about like both versions being $30 or something like that?
Well, yeah, when Ignition was still the publisher, you know, our director of sales had decided to do cross-buy with that price point. And then when Atlas took the game on, I think they invested a lot more money into it to add more features and more content. So, you know, when they became the publisher, the deals that we had struck with retailers, you know, were gone. So they had to make those deals again, and yeah, it was up to them. And, you know, ultimately, I think it would have been really cool if they could have had the cross-buy, but, yeah. I ended up playing mostly on PS3, some on Vita, but for me, I wanted it to be as big as it could. You know, like, I wanted to see those characters larger than life on my TV, so, yeah.
Out of the six, like, who do you mean?
Which characters? I play as the Sorceress. I'm a fan of her, yeah.
When I find time to play Dragon's Crown, I mean Archer.
She's a little too slight for me, perhaps. I don't know. You know, some people prefer that silhouette.
Yeah, without being careful and stepping on and not stepping on any toes, like, excluding this year, recent years, what are some of your favorite games? Like, I'm interested in hearing, because, like, I was very, like, interested in your thoughts and stuff during 1UP, like, 1UP era.
Right. You mean, like, this year or just last few years,
like,
or...?
If you want to include this year, then sure.
This year, I guess my favorite things I've been playing... That's kind of a good question, actually. Like, there's games that I enjoy, but I'm still kind of conflicted about, like Bioshock Infinite. Like, I really like parts of it. The other parts were a little disappointing. Ultimately, it's a cool game. I played a lot of Dragon's Crown, which is one of my favorite games of the year. I've played a tremendous amount of the 3DS Street Pass game called Flower Town. It's fantastic. You raise flowers.
I will look into that when I get my 3DS next.
It costs $5. I'm looking forward to really diving into a lot of the PS4 stuff coming out this weekend. But I actually have a huge backlog of games, because what I do at Sony, I do developer relations. I manage the accounts of over 200 different development teams. So I'm constantly playing bits and pieces of lots of little games that aren't out yet. And... that means I don't have a lot of time to actually play finished games. So over, like, Thanksgiving break and Christmas break, I intend to, like, dive into, like, real games and finally play some games.
Okay, now let's step on a big toe. What is one game that you didn't like in recent times?
That's a good question.
Maybe it's not a big toe, but we'll see. Like a disappointing or like infuriated you to no end.
Oh man, you're looking at me to sling the mud. I was disappointed in New Super Mario Brothers U.
Oh,
I was. I mean, because I had just played New Super Mario Brothers 2 like 3 months before and finished it on my 3DS,
yes,
and I felt like I wasn't ready for a whole nother set of that so quickly. And it also is a sequel of sorts to Super Mario World, which is my favorite Mario game of all time. So if you're going to make a sequel to Super Mario World, I come in with incredibly high expectations.
And it has to have some of the elements from that classic.
Right, and yeah, and even though it was a good game, it was not a 10 out of 10. So yeah, I ended up being kind of disappointed by that one. So that's about a year ago.
Yeah. What about a new? Did you try out New Super Luigi U?
I did not, actually. I wanted to buy it, and then I decided I could wait for it to have a price drop.
Yeah, I glommed onto it because, they made the physical release, and then,
I do kind of want that green box. I'm a sucker for strangely colored boxes.
And, Luigi on that box.
And then, don't you feel like there's too much Luigi this year? I'm kind of Luigi'd out.
Yeah, that's, the only Luigi game I played this year.
Oh, okay. So. Well, actually, Luigi Mansion 2 is good. It's a good one.
He's called it Luigi Mansion.
I do call it Luigi Mansion, because in Japan, it never had a possessive.
Yes.
Luigi Mansion.
It wasn't Luigi, no.
No, it's just Luigi Mansion. It's just Luigi Mansion.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
And, because, they were, 100 seconds. You only have 100 seconds to beat this thing, and it's, it's super hard. It engineered to be hard. So I was like, this is the Famicom Disk System Mario Bros. 2 that we never got.
Oh, that game is so hard.
I mean, in that spirit.
Have you ever played that game? Have you ever played through it?
I remember, getting the GBA card, because I remember hearing Disk Systems.
Well, it's also on the Super Nintendo, what's that called? Mario All-Stars. It's on there.
Oh, yeah, but then, that's the... the adulterated SNES part. So
true.
Graphic part.
Well, you should play. If you consider yourself a hardcore Mario fan, you really should play through it, because at the end of that game, after World 8-4, there's four more incredibly hard stages, A, B, C, D, the hardest platforming of all time. We were just playing 1001 Spikes, which is this awesome, super hardcore platforming game coming out for PS4, and I think that Super Mario Bros. 2 Japan version is actually harder than 1001 Spikes or Super Meat Boy or VVVV. It's the hardest thing of all time.
Yeah.
What are you looking forward to in the next few months?
The next few months?
Oh, okay, before the end of the year. What are you excited about playing?
The end of the year. Well, not shockingly, a lot of the stuff that's on PS4 soon. Next week, Mario 3D World.
I'm excited for that. I'm also excited for Zelda, although I hear
it's... And Zelda, yes.
Oh, okay, here's something that's disappointing. I'm still playing and I'm liking it, but Pokemon X and Y and Zelda are barely in 3D. Pokemon, only the battles are in 3D, and I've heard that nothing in Zelda's in 3D. This thing is called the 3DS. I thought the things were going to be in 3D.
Well, I think if you turn it on, then, you do get, the interesting, especially, with, that first dungeon, that was just an example, smacking that thing, and then you get on it, and that's a catapult.
But, my friends who've been playing through it say there's very little 3D in the game.
Oh, otherwise. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And Pokemon is barely 3D. Anyway, I want more 3D on my 3DS.
Would you like more V in your Vita?
There's a lot of V in the Vita, and there's some really cool stuff coming out for Vita next year, but I think this holiday...
Danganronpa Europa's coming!
I know, right, to America, that's exciting. Yeah. Actually, NIS...
Packaged! I'm surprised!
NIS gets props for bringing out the weirdest, coolest stuff from Japan, and I hope they keep bringing it.
Oh, yeah. Also, this year, who do I hug for bringing Kasumi Kurapachi Diva to America?
Oh, that would be Sega themselves, and that game is great. Actually,
I remember you asked me about the first Kachi Diva,
right?
Back at PAX East.
Had you gone to have you seen her Vocaloid in concert? Have you watched her hologram dance around?
I have not. The only ones they had in America are theater, they pre-recorded.
No, there was a live Hatsune Miku show at Nokia Theater during Anime Expo 2 years ago, and it was sold out.
But that's West Coast. I'm talking about East
Coast. Oh, you're on the East Coast. Yeah.
Yeah.
They should come to New York.
Hey, yeah.
For real.
New York Comic Con 2014. Yeah. The Guest of Honor Hatsune Miku, do
but
it.
The game, actually, if you haven't tried it, it has amazing animation, and every song has unique animation, and it's all 60 frames a second, and I just kind of tried it as a joke, and then I totally got addicted to it, and they're making a sequel for Vita and PS3 next year, so hopefully that'll come out in America.
Some version if it comes out for PS4. But
I bet it will, eventually.
But not the arcade, the real doll looking character model. I really like it when in the Vita game and the PS3 game, they look like Vita game characters.
Yeah.
I appreciate that design more than the really creepy, way too plasticine moving, you mentioned Dead or Alive back in the days.
Oh, where they look kind of like dolls, dead in the eye dolls.
Yeah. and like the Uncanny Valley element of it, and them dancing like with the motion capture like dance sequences and stuff.
You know what I'm actually looking forward to is the JoJo fighting game. I know in Japan
there All-Star were, Battle?
Yeah, I know in Japan there was some there was like a mode that people didn't like that was like free to play. I hear they're gonna take that out.
Oh, they are?
That's the rumor I heard. But like wow. just the animation in that game is amazing.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I forgot. Like, I remember like thinking about pre-ordering that. Like, cause they had like the golden experience. Like,
yeah.
And, you know, CyberConnect too. Like, Asuna's Wrath and Naruto. And like, they do.
Dude,
really
those Naruto games are beautiful. And yes. You know, and like, Dot Hack. I think there were too many of them, but it was a good idea back in the beginning.
Like the first era, I think.
Yeah, the first few Dot Hacks were good, but then they
that
did too
and
many.
The anime and that's yeah. basically like, and then like the light novel, like the first one, like and then the Dot Hack just dies for me at that point.
Well, and then there's like the secret old great games by that team, like Silent Bomber and Tail Concerto.
Did Silent Bomber come out in America?
It did.
It's that down.
I actually have my copy of Silent Bomber autographed by Hiroshi, the main dude at CyberConnect.
Like last year, I got Hiroshi to sign my Usher's Wrath.
So yeah, you met Hiroshi. He's cool. Cool
guy. He wears Naruto clothes all the time. And he's like,
he cosplays. Yeah, he's great. He does cosplay.
In Marathon, he ran a marathon to Naruto in that pose. More questions with Shane. So Shane,
what the fuck am I doing?
Anyway, yesterday, like I finally met Christian Nutt. He's a super cool guy.
Oh, my good old buddy Christian Nutt. I've known him for a long time.
Yeah, I just wanted to ask, like, what's the history between you guys?
Oh, I met him in, wow, what year was that? 1993, maybe? Yeah. You were what, like 4 years old back then? Something like that, yeah.
You were not born in 1989.
Wait, what year were you born?
1989.
Oh, okay, so yeah, you were alive. You were a person by the time I met Christian Nutt in 1993.
Okay. Wait, so you were 4 years old then?
No, I'm old. I was...
Yeah, see, you just threw me for a loop here.
I threw you for a loop, yeah. I met Christian Nutt when we were in college in... Well, no, actually, I was still in high school. Yeah, I met him when I was in high school.
Wow.
Yep.
And you guys are all about the anime and the games and stuff.
Yeah, actually, you know, it's funny. His roommate was a friend of mine, and... Our mutual friend was like, you guys like the same stuff, you should meet, you'll be friends. So as soon as we met, we were instantly friends, and we were into the same games, and yeah, he introduced me lots of cool anime, and yeah, we were instant buddies, and we later worked at the same place at Gamers.com, we were roommates, so yeah, I've known Christian for a really long time.
And one thing you guys have in common is an expectation for the Evangelion series.
Oh man, like I am, you know, Evangelion is my favorite anime of all time, and... Yeah, I think initially he was maybe a bigger fan, but I think now I am probably the bigger Evangelion fan.
Yeah.
I remember, like, Adam Boyce, he referred to, like, that big thing where they showed all the indie games on E3. He called that the 9.
And yes.
For some reason, that reminded me of Evangelion. I don't know why. Like, did you, like, come up with it? Like,
no, that was all him. But if I could do anything to make anything more like Evangelion, I'd be very, very happy.
Can you give me an instance?
Well, there's a game that got kickstarted recently called Hyper Light Drifter.
Yes.
That is coming to PlayStation 4. And as soon as I saw it, I was like, oh, it's Evangelion. And, like, it is. Like, and if you've seen the trailer, it's Evangelion. And the guy who's making it, I saw him indicate, like, oh, I like your game because there's, like, Unit 01 going berserk. And he's like, yeah, there is. So, you know, I think Evangelion is old enough now to where it's influenced a lot of people in the same way that, like, Macross or Akira, you know. And what really amazes me about Evangelion is that its creator, Hideaki Anno, he continues to revise it and surprise fans. And, you know, even though he's retold the story now 3 different times, it continues to amaze me. Like, the most recent film, Evangelion 3.33.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you your thoughts.
Have you seen it?
I have not.
Have you? Okay. Well,
I know, like, the gist of it, though.
I'm sad that you know the gist of it, because...
Well, it's like...
I mean, I almost don't want to spoil it for your listeners. But, you know, each time they've been doing these remakes, the first one, the second one, at the end of the movie, they show a preview of what the next movie is going to be. And, you know, these are retellings of Evangelion again. And at the end of the second one, they show the trailer for what the third movie is going to be. And then there were no real trailers beyond that leading up to the release. So when it came out, everyone goes into it expecting to see what they think they know. And instead, it is completely different. It is phenomenally different. The characters are different. The setting is different. And you either are going to like it or you're going to be very, very angry at what he did. And I think Christian was angry. I was not angry. Like, I saw it with Jeremy Parrish, Toasty Frog,
yeah.
And we loved it. And yeah, I can't wait to see what the final one will be, because there's one more coming. I think the Neon Genesis Evangelion might be the greatest anime of all time.
But you still hate Mari.
I really do hate Mari, because Asuka is my favorite character. And I felt that Mari was, like, taking aspects of Asuka, the good aspects, the likable aspects of Asuka, and making a character that is just those, and leaving Asuka with all the negative aspects, which, as an Asuka fan, I took really, you know, harshly. Yeah.
And one series that does get a lot of comparisons with Evangelion is Metal Gear.
I'm also probably the biggest Metal Gear fan at Sony, right? Well, no, there's another guy, Eddie, who we fight over who's the bigger Metal Gear fan. And I'm really excited to see
we
what...
We can fight over who's the biggest Metal Gear Solid 2 fan.
Yeah, you might... Because, like, if it really came down to it, I really love MGS2, but if I could only have one, it would be MGS3. But I do love MGS2. And I think Kojima was so brave for what he did. And in a way, it's kind of like what Hideaki Anno does, where he, like, takes the fans' expectations and is, you know, brave enough to, like, destroy those expectations by doing something you didn't think would ever happen, you know?
Yeah. But then that kind of, like... It's like I'm talking behind his back or something, because I know he's hanging around. Like,
yeah, he might hear standard. Us. He might hear us right now. And I'm excited to see what he shows here at the Phantom Pain tomorrow at Spike.
Or is it Ground Zeroes?
Oh, it's actually...
This is like MGS5.
It's just, yeah, it's just Ground Zero stuff.
But MGS5, like PS4 related, something mind-blowing of everything.
Right, and I think it's cool that he's actually splitting MGS5...
Maybe hit her voice back.
That he's splitting MGS5 into, like, 2 pieces. Like, I think that's interesting, you know? It's different. It's a bit like the, you know, like the tanker for MGS2 being, like, a tease for the whole game, you know?
Yeah,
so
but then everyone keeps taking that, like, that analogy and, like instantly thinking that, like, Ground Zeroes is just, like, one, like, minuscule bit. Like,
no, it's, like a demo. I understand it's more of a kind of, you know, a little open-ended thing where you can go do lots of stuff in this world, you know? Like, it's not just one directed thing like the tanker. I guess we'll all see how big it is when it comes out next year, but I'm hoping to be able to spend a lot of time in it, you know?
I forget, I don't think you were on EGM itself back in 2001? You were on Gamers.com, right?
2000, yeah, I was back, 2001 was Gamers.com, so I started EGM... maybe 2003? Yeah, long time ago. I didn't review MGS2.
I know you did.
But I did review MGS3 and MGS4. And then, you know, Metal Gear Solid...
Oh, you didn't review MGS4?
Yes, I did.
The one of .com score wasn't you. That was Jeremy.
That was Jeremy. I reviewed it for EGM. And Jeremy didn't get to go to the review event.
The boot camp.
Yeah, the crazy Nasu boot camp, which is still like as crazy as this.
You just called a Nazi boot camp?
No, Nasu. It was
Nasu, thank God.
Not Nazi, no. It was a Nasu boot camp. But it was awesome. It was really, really cool. In fact, this review event that we had here for PlayStation 4 this week is probably the just as cool as that. But that one took place in Konami's like secret lair base in the middle of nowhere in Japan. They have
Konami's own Zanzibar Land.
They basically have a big shell. No, it's like it's more than that. It's like this huge hotel built on a hot spring in the middle of nowhere. And the journalists just like took it over for 3 days and got to play the game. It was pretty rad. Yeah. Metal Gear.
Yeah.
Metal Gear. Although I am, you know, the Kiefer versus Hayter thing, I gotta say, like, the jury's still out. Like, I am really used to David Hayter. Kiefer Sutherland's a great actor. We'll see what people think. I don't know. It's hard to guess. Metal Gear, Evangelion, you're touching on all the good stuff here.
I feel like I want to go to war with you at MGS4, though, because, like, that was, like, your 2008 game of the year. And, like,
well,
like the thing is...
In hindsight, yeah, like, the further I get away from it, you know, the flaws were there, and it's a little disjointed in a lot of ways, but... And I think if the whole game had been like Act 2, if they could have had 3 Act 2s in that game, it would have been the greatest Metal Gear maybe ever.
Did you ever read the Project Ito novelization?
No, is it good?
I feel like it is like...
Did it get localized into English officially?
It did.
Oh,
yeah.
Really?
What they did in the Project Ito book, they took out the Beauty Beast because like it did feel like kind of slotted in for the sake of a boss fight.
It was kind of slotted in for having hot chicks in the game, actually. I have to wonder if...
That was, like, I think it'll feel... Like, now, I think it's, like, Kojima's, like, this is a next-gen thing. We have real, like, real people in games now.
Right, and you can ogle them and look at them and, yeah.
Take pictures of them.
Take pictures of them.
Make them dance to J-pop.
Yeah. Yeah, Beauty and the Beast Core, maybe not the best bosses in Metal Gear history.
And then Trevor talks to them about all their, like, really generic backstories.
Yeah.
And well, you sit through them.
So, you're a huge Revengeance fan?
Yes. Metal Gear Solid, like, for me, middle school, there are 2 games that ruled me, that ruled my life in middle school. Metal Gear Solid, Sons of Liberty, and Shinobi. PS2 Shinobi.
I love PS2 Shinobi.
I beat the crap out of both those games. I broke a glass door because of Shinobi.
Okay.
It was so hard, but I loved it.
So, I reviewed Shinobi, and the version that we reviewed was harder than the version that finally came out, and the last boss in the version I reviewed took me, like, 3 hours to beat. It was so hard. But that's a really good game. I wish that Nightshade had been as good as Shinobi. It wasn't quite as good.
I heard a lot about that. And then, like, also, at that point, I was getting into my Japanophile phase, and I was like, oh, because the first Shinobi had dual language.
Right.
And then Nightshade, Kunoichi did it. And I was like, oh, I'm not going to buy the game.
Did you ever go back and play it, though? Or?
I didn't. Yeah. I played as far as the demo, and it did kind of irk me that there were a lot more load times than I was used to.
Yeah. You know, but, like, another Shinobi would be cool. I wish someone would make that. Yeah.
They made a 3DS game. It's not quite the same, and it's Joe Musashi.
Oh, yeah.
And what's this news about a Shinobi movie with Joe Musashi?
Might have stolen that name from a movie. I mean...
No. Like, there's a rumor that there's a movie of Joe Musashi and the Shinobi games, like, adaptation.
Really?
Something like that. Yeah, somebody tweeted me about it.
From Japan or from China or something? Or not America?
No idea.
Huh.
It would have to be in America.
There's definitely no movie called Shinobi that I've heard of.
Oh, there is, but it's not Canadian.
Right,
game.
It's not based on that.
I think it has Sony Chiba in that.
I'm actually a fan of the old Shinobi games. Like, if you haven't played Revenge of Shinobi or Shinobi 3 The Ninja Master, those are fantastic games for Sega Genesis.
I think Shinobi 3 is a hitting virtual console or something like that.
It is. It's really good, yeah. Those are two of the best side-scrolling action ninja games of all time.
Are they the, is it the pre-release, like, a press-only copy that has Spider-Man and Batman?
No, actually, the first, so when Revenge of Shinobi came out for Genesis in, like, 1989, for the first, like, 2 years, the version you could buy, you fought Terminator, you fought Superman, you fought Godzilla, you fought Batman, and they didn't license any of them. So, like... Yeah, if you have one of those original cartridges, you have all those things. And then later, when they realized you can't just put these characters in your game, they had to go back and change all the characters into something else. So I think I still have my original cartridge with those versions.
And Kojima got away. Well, like, the games didn't really leave. I think they hit Europe, the original MSX. So he still had, like, Arnold. You fought Arnold the Predator and stuff like that.
Well, actually, on the internet, there's some great site that shows in the 80s in Japan how many games stole, like, key art from either Rambo or the Terminator or Commando, and it's like literally like 40 games where they just copied pictures of Sylvester Stallone and Arnold Schwarzenegger. And of course, you know, Metal Gear as well. Metal Gear is Escape from New York. Or Kyle Reese. Yeah, Kyle Reese is on the cover of Metal Gear, basically, from Terminator. Yeah, that happened a lot back then.
There was a great snapshot that somebody took once where they're of Ghost in the Shell. Like when Motoko was hiding behind the pillar before she's fighting the spider tank. And in that that particular angle, in the with that screenshot shrinked down, it looks like Saul's neck. And people were like, no, you're out of me. That was hilarious.
I'm excited for the new Ghost in the Shell series. I think it might have started in Japan already.
Yeah, no, I think like at least one installment has come out in America. Like,
okay, I need to see that, yeah.
It's subtitled only.
That's what I'm into subtitles.
And so how did you feel about Revengeance, Metal Gear Rising?
I am conflicted on it. You know, that's what you were talking about, games I need to finish. That's the game I need to finish. I got about halfway through it. Like,
how far do you get?
Almost
one. I mean, do you know?
I beat Mistral. Maybe I'm not even halfway through.
That's like a
third of the way.
Third.
Yeah. Though I hear that like the end game, there starts being just bosses and fewer levels towards the end of the game. Like you're just like fight. There's like a boss rush or I don't know.
You're not quite like. Like, it's not quite like a labyrinth. You're just like walking on flat planes. And yeah, and like, there is like a whole mission that's just one boss.
But
it is one of the best boss fights.
I will say, you know, traditionally, I really enjoy the mechanics in Platinum games. I think Platinum makes great action gameplay. And I love the way it feels, but it, you know, it isn't a Metal Gear Solid game. And it doesn't call itself Metal Gear Solid, it's Metal Gear Revengeance. But part of me wonders when they first announced that game as a Metal Gear Solid game, if that game they were going, that Kojima Productions was going to make, would have ultimately been more what the fans wanted from a story perspective. Because I think the story in Revengeance, especially for fans of Raiden, and I have a lot of friends who are very...
I am a huge
fan. I have other friends who are big, big Raiden fans. I like Raiden as well, and like a lot of people don't like what Raiden becomes in that game.
Oh, but I do.
You do, okay.
And I can't explain to you why, because you have to... I mean, like, do you know what he goes through in that game?
I know some of it. I don't know what happens at the end, and I know that like some of the things that I think are real might not be real, and they may be lying to him, but I think for a lot of hardcore Metal Gear fans, it was just too different from what we're used to from a story perspective. But I'm glad it exists, and it's really fun to play, and it's pretty. So, yeah. I guess I need to finish it before I really come up with a full opinion.
Well, the way I see it, like, because I, you know, like I just said, like, you know, MGS2 and Shinobi ruled my life. 60% of my body is MGS2, I guess 30% of Shinobi. So, like, I played, like, MGS2 over and over. Like, I got every single conversation with Rose. So I want to be here. Because I
well, so if you love the relationship, if you love their relationship, then, like, you must. Like,
I didn't really love it. I did that because I love the story. I read the script top to bottom. I knew there were quote-unquote conversations that were not in the script and document of MGS2.
Right.
So I wanted to get every single bit. And there's like parts where Ryan's talking to the bros about like, oh yeah, you know, people online, like, you don't, like, how many people online do you know? How many do you meet in real life from the people, from that group?
Well, I mean, they're,
like,
they're
really great ideas. Like, Kojima was taken, tackling.
Like, Metal Gear Solid 2, I mean, you know, I think I talked about this on podcast years ago, but like, it really is it's very prescient about the internet. Like, you know, this was over 10 years ago, and Kojima had seen what the internet and the dissemination of information on the internet would do to everything. Like, suddenly, you didn't have to be an expert for your opinion to be viewed by millions of people. Anybody on anywhere can put their opinion on the internet, and, you know, depending on who stumbles upon it, it's just as valid as a fact. You know, an opinion becomes a fact, and whatever you write about a game, you know, whatever you would write about Metal Gear Solid, suddenly matters to people. And I think that game, if you go back and really do a close reading of it, he kind of saw where culture was going in like this everything all the time YouTube comments world that we live in now, where there's just so many opinions out there that it's hard to tell which one really is, you know, important or real or matters. And I think 20 years, 30 years from now, MGS2 will be studied and dissected as a really important piece of game narrative.
Yeah. And like for me, like after MGS2, like the story's like, okay, we're gonna find a child. It's a guy because we don't know any gender. Japanese doesn't have any gender, never like pronouns.
Yeah.
And then like Raiden's like, oh, count me in. And then like it's like, nope, he has to sell things with Rose first. And then like, this probably goes into my backlash against MGS4. Like, I've bailed out on it now.
But don't you think that, like, I agree that MGS4 goes way too far trying to, like, tie everything up and connect everything? Because, like, the story had been so complicated and fragmented through all the Metal Gears. And, you know, in the ending where they try to, like, make everything work and fit, it's just a little it's almost too much, you know, like maybe let the mystery be somewhat, you know, like the same problem, like, you know, with Star Wars, when you start explaining the Force as midichlorians, like, maybe it was better when we didn't know what it was. Maybe it was better when we didn't have anti-Fox die or whatever, you know, like
Fox alive.
Fox alive, god, yeah, Fox alive. Yeah, but there's things I really like about MGS4, like Sunny. I thought Sunny was a great character, you know.
Yeah, she's pretty interesting in the book too.
I need to read this book.
Hopefully
it's still available.
You know what's amazing? Like, Project Ito was like a sci-fi author, right? And he was a Metal Gear fan. He came to Kojima. He was like, oh yeah, I'm a Metal Gear fan, whatever. And then, like, later on, like, he became like an accomplished writer, I think. And then it's in the back of the book, like, I think it's Kojima's, like, notes about, like, you know, him, like, his, like, his time with Project Ito, because he passed away, like,
shortly after
the book came out, and, like, MGS4 and all that stuff. So it's kind of sad. But then, like, this book is, like, yeah, it's really, really great. And it, with the setting changes, and, like, I jump back to the Nomad all the time, like, the big ship they're in, and I'm jumping back and forth topics. But, like the book has, like, a really great way of tying it all together. Like, especially, like, for people that, like, it has, like, it explains things for people that are picking this up, because it just says, Metal Gear Solid, Guns of the Patriots.
Okay, so even if you've never played MGS 1 through 3, if you just read this book, it would be a coherent story?
Yeah.
That's cool, because, like, that's one of the problems with Metal Gear, I think. If you haven't kept up with it like you and I have, it seems impenetrable, and the people are afraid because the story is just so crazy, you know?
It's like a great manga, but then you hear there's like 70 volumes, like, I can't get into it, I can't jump in.
Right, yeah, that people have told me, like, oh, actually, One Piece is great, you should read it or watch it. I'm like, no, there's like 500 things, I don't have time for that, sorry.
Exactly. It's like, how have you been going on for this long?
And it's still going, right, One Piece? Still going.
The Evangelion manga ended, and that had billions of delays.
And I'll say, and
Sakamoto... Oh, did you read that?
Well, I was in Japan in September, and I saw that Sodom, you know, the last volume hasn't been localized yet, or has it now?
Not yet.
I picked it up in Japan, I was looking through it, I was like, okay, I'm going to wait for this to get localized, my Japanese isn't good enough. But I've actually met Sadamoto, and he's really cool. And I always found it cool that Anno let Sadamoto rewrite the story in the way he wanted to. And, like, you know, it still kind of covers the same ground, but in a different way. And, like, you know, and the art's beautiful, so...
Yeah.
Yeah, Evangelion. Always a pleasure, man.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
And that's going to do it. This is the final episode of the Game Mavens podcast. Hope you enjoyed all the content over the years. Well, what's there anyways. And until next time, play on.
We all fight our own fight. Will you feel the desire when always struggling with the truth of the life?